morning, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for the invitation to join you on this discussion. I'm going to face some reality here. First of all, I do earn royalties on a textbook that relates to this topic, but I won't mention the name or make any reference to it. Secondly, I'm not an epidemiologist. I have 3 degrees in public health, and I had to take a lot of epidemiology courses along the way, but I specialized in public health education and have devoted my career, and you've got to know it's been a long one, to the evaluation of public health education campaigns and programs. And the public's understanding of the epidemiological facts is always an essential part of it. And I must say, the public remains confused, even perhaps disdainful to a lot of the data because they're confused, I suppose. The difference, I think, for example, between relative risk and absolute risk is a total mess for the public's understanding of a lot of things. And we keep communicating in this language that a lot of the public doesn't understand. The public is getting a lot of interest in epidemiology. CDC has become the most favored agency in the federal government, the agency that the public trusts the most. Maybe because they need to trust somebody to communicate information to them. But a lot of that has been a few films that have come along and have, like Contagion, and have featured the role of the epidemiological detectives and how they have had to save society, save humanity, save civilization. There's been an awful lot in the news about Mayor Bloomberg's initiatives and why should a government be imposing a lot of these kinds of restrictions. This was a New Yorker cover story. I think one of the more compelling ways that we've communicated evidence about epidemiological trends has been with history. With benchmarks that the public can understand, that they can identify with, and that they, because they can understand them, they can associate them with peaks and troughs in an incidence or prevalence curve over time. This curve for tobacco control actually fits pretty well with the curve for injury control, particularly automobile injuries, more particularly alcohol-related automobile injuries. And if we could do that, this sort of pictorial portrayal, and it can be done a lot better than this, I'm sure, with good graphics, as an aid to people's understanding of what's going on in society that may be influencing their issues with obesity, with texting while driving and so forth. I think it would be a step in the right direction. Well, here's the problem, I think, in broad scale, especially as our communications ultimately have to reach policymakers. Where am I? You're 30 meters above the ground in a balloon. You must be a researcher. Yes, how did you know? Because what you told me is absolutely correct, but completely useless. You must be a policymaker. Yes, how did you know? Because you don't know where you are, you don't know where you're going, and now you're blaming me. So this is really what we're up against. There's a real disconnect between our language and the language of the public and the representatives of the public in policymaking positions. A second problem, or maybe I'm on the third or fourth now, I lose track, is that we have a tendency to not want to go beyond anything that we can't say with great certainty is valid. Well, the world is not going to be that nice to us. There's an awful lot of probability out there, and so certainty becomes a matter of probability. We ask then, among the things that are valid, is it important? And then only those things that are valid and important get tested for whether they're useful. I think we need to turn this paradigm upside down and ask first, what's useful? What might be useful that we ought to be thinking about and talking about and communicating about, educating about? Among those things that are useful, some will be important, and only some of those will be sufficiently valid. But then we are left with the question, and I think this is the utility of this reversal of the pyramid, we're left the question, how can we make the things for which we don't have yet sufficient validity more valid and more, and therefore more important, more useful? I want to suggest one other major strategy for the task you've, the question you put to us, and that is participatory research. It's catching on. There are agencies, even NIH agencies, who are now requiring certain kinds of research to be more participatory, to engage the public in them. I've defined participatory research has three things: systematic investigation, actively involving people in a co-learning process for the purpose of action conducive to health. Now, that could be a lot of things, but if it meets those three criteria, it should pass muster. But often other things creep in. What it is not, it's not just involving people more intensively as subjects of research or evaluation. You don't turn it into participatory research by asking survey subjects 100 questions rather than just 50. That doesn't cut it. It's not just going out into the community and making a perfunctory speech about what your research is going to try to do to them or do with them. It's not just getting them to do the research for you. I want you to quit smoking, lose 35 pounds, and I want you to come back and tell me how the hell you did it. What we, I think, need more participatory research for, in part, is blending the very objective measures we have through the lens we look at health with the lens that the public looks at it. So we have the professional and scientific lens with very great acuity on the objective indicators of health. And that's not to be disparaged, not to be dismissed, but we could complement it more effectively, I think, with the lay people's, lay person's subjective understanding of health. Now, you're all scientists and professionals, and so you're going to say, quite predictably and understandably and with validity, that objective indicators are more reliable than subjective indicators. But when you ask me to tell you what the public wants to know, it's the answers to their subjective perception of health. And it's their subjective perception of health that's going to drive their behavior, their risk factors, and ultimately their health. So we need to engage that perspective more. Here are the three worlds, that the three world views that are at work then. Our view of the actual needs of a community, a population, actual needs I put in quotation marks because they're only as actual as our perspicacity in knowing what to measure and our ability to measure it objectively. Then there is this worldview of people's perceived needs and priorities, what the public thinks they need, what they want. And then there is the worldview of the policymakers with respect to resources, the feasibility of interventions to address those needs, and policy. It is the overlap of these three, the shaded area A, where we have the greatest potential for action. And if we don't have all three of them overlapping, action is going to be difficult. And so the way we get that, we enlarge the area of A by moving the circles closer together. We move the people's perceived needs and priorities in the direction of what we think they really need through public health education. We move the professionals' and scientific's perception of what the public needs through participatory research. If we can engage them more in helping us understand how they view their problems will go a long way toward the issues that your committee of the epidemiology section is struggling with. And finally, we use public health education to build an informed electorate, which is a form of advocacy for regulation and organizational development and all the things that Mayor Bloomberg is trying to do to New Yorkers. There are other subspecies of these things, like policy research and surveillance, that connect, that can help connect the participatory research with advocacy and regulation. But Mary and I couldn't agree more with you, and I applaud your recognition that the professionals want to know how to analyze the data and present it. They present it to different audiences, but one of the audiences will be the public, and we need to think through more carefully how best to do that and how to do it graphically with as little jargon as possible and with as much understanding about such concepts as relative risk and absolute risk. Thank you very much.